Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Insane in the membrane.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the... Wow, I fucked it up. It threw me. Keep going. Good afternoon. Hello, welcome to your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And this week I'm joined by brilliant comedian and fantastic human being, Ben Pope. Hello.
Hi, mate. How's it going?
Good to see you. We will say this at the top. Yes, I've got baby brain. We've got a baby, so I'm a bit fucked. So I keep forgetting how to do things.
Of course.
Yeah, so that introduction is absolute pony. I did the early shift today, so I'm a bit all over the place.
Ben is doing it from a
dual carriageway, so there will be traffic noise as we go along, just so you know.
Yeah, baby on board at both ends, I think.
Good to see you, Ben.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It's such a treat to do this. I don't get to do that many. I don't end up doing loads of podcasts. It's really nice to be able to, like, lovely to be invited. Just sort of let loose a little bit. That'd be nice.
Well, this is it. You can go where you want. You say what you want. And if you say anything, which I don't imagine you will, if anything too controversial, we can just edit that shit out.
That's not what I meant. I'm not, great. I can finally air all of my horrible opinions.
Imagine that. We find the dark side of Ben Pope.
let's not even name it. I don't even want to go there.
I'd sort of seen your name around and then saw you in Brighton. And, you know, having been in comedy for many years, it's always nice when you see someone that makes you go, fuck, I want to see more of this. And then saw your solo show later on. And honestly, mate, brilliant. I love the way you're so relaxed on stage. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Are you worried underneath?
Yeah, at all times. I was thinking about that earlier today. What I should first say is thank you. What a lovely load of compliments. That's so nice. I fully agree. It's always lovely, and it's very flattering to be called this, but I always find it's lovely when you see someone who you haven't seen before, and they're like at a stage where they're doing, you know, things that make you excited about it, but, you know, and I have that all the time. And it's the joy of doing this, right? I suppose is that you get this constant carousel of different people all the time, and you get exposed to all these new cool things. That's very flattering of you to say that. In terms of like relaxation, I was thinking about this earlier today. I think when I first started, I was so like nervous and so, you could see it on me on stage all the time. And then something about like 5 years in just sort of broke. And now I've just sort of relented to the fact that it's just me. And I've done like enough gigs now where it's just like, if this doesn't work, then there's another one later in the week. And so like, do you know what I mean? Like, why be stressed about it anymore? And that has just made things a lot better and easier.
That's good. I still struggle. Even though I'm 20 years in, I still struggle with the all of those people now think I'm shit. And
yeah,
because I had one. It still went okay. It was that classic thing of there was a girl in the corner and she was, I could see her rolling her eyes and muttering to her friends. And every time I said anything, she was like, oh, right. And that's all I could focus on. Even though the rest of the room was having a great time. And I came away from going, yeah. And I came away from it going, oh, that was a shit gig. They're all going to think I'm shit. I shouldn't have mentioned that person was doing that. Oh, God. You should know better after 20 years. You're, and then just, you know, instead of just going, oh, fuck it. It doesn't matter.
Well, I always think with those ones is actually you don't, and I mean, this is a particular bugbear. It's like people rolling their eyes. I'm like, I always think that is like, A, don't, like, Who are you impressing? Why are you being so cynical? Like, you've come to a comedy show. Like, why? How insincere is your life that you're sitting there watching someone like trying to make you laugh, going like, how gauche? Like, oh, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Like, enjoy your life. What are you doing? And also, the other thing is, I think, like, with people like that, is you actually don't know if that's their way of like enjoying, like, they're going like, oh, I can't believe he's made that joke. But they're like secretly quite enjoy it. Like they're like, oh, we're going to talk about this later. You know, you just don't know what that, you just don't know what people have taken away from it. No. So I guess, but I totally relate. Like that feeling of coming away from something and being like, I can't believe I can't, after all this time, like I still can't, like, why didn't I make that work? How come I didn't get them? Like, you know, why do I not have these skills by now? It's so, yeah, it's very frustrating.
It's one, and it
but
was
if it went own, right yeah. every time, it wouldn't be worth doing.
No, that's true. That is true. And it does fire you up. Like you say, it does fire you up for the next one. You go, right, okay, those are the mistakes I made. Like, they're an older crowd as well, a lot of them. And I started weird. And then I said it was in the corner of a pub, so in a pub in the countryside. So it was, so they all knew each other, and I sort of went, oh, it's nice to be here at the village meeting, you know, that classic line. And then did this thing where I'm like, and then I just said to this fellow, I went, this is more, wasn't that bad. Police are here. Shit.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Yeah,
no, it's all right. I like this, warts and all. I like it. I said to this fella in the front, I said, oh, this is like more like a town meeting. We're in here. You know, I could have just come around your house and done this. You know, and like, hello, mate. How's your mum? How's your mum? And I knew in the back of my head, he's an older dude. I bet his mum isn't here. And he went, mum's dead. And the whole room went weird. And I went, oh, they think. And I went, oh, do you feel that? They all think this is going to be weird, but it's not. It's going to be really funny. And it wasn't. It was all right. He went, oh, she's been dead 7 years. I mean, well, you're used to it now.
Yeah. But do you see, that's like objectively funny. You do just have to be like, it was the wrong people for all the right jokes, you know? Yeah. Sometimes that's tough.
Oh man, it was one of them. But where did you grow up, Ben? Let's find out about you. I don't know anything about you. Sure. I didn't know you how funny you are. So let's work back from that.
That's very kind. I grew up in Sussex, really. Okay. So, which is part of the reason we met in Brighton, really, is because I always try and do as much stuff as I can in Brighton, because it's sort of where I spent a lot of my teenage years. Mm. But I had quite a weird. When I was about 8, I went to an all-boys Catholic boarding school. I was one of the choristers at Westminster Cathedral.
Wow.
Which is like one of the, not the abbey where all the coronations happen, but just down the road. It's like the Catholic version, basically. So it was like I went and like sung in like a fancy Latin choir for like, 5 years. We went on tour. We recorded CDs and all this stuff. And I was like 10. It's like a really strange way to do an education, and very bizarre and very like, quite intense But very like, you know, we were like exposed to a lot of cool stuff and had a lot of independence quite young. So that I think probably gave me like the entertainment bug. I think there's something about like performing and like being kind of, you know, concerts and stuff. You do a lot of like, I don't know, there's a lot of performance to all of it. I mean, there's a lot of performance in like religion in general. I mean, I'm not religious anymore, but at the time I, you know, there's all of this, sort of, you know, you come out and do all the ritual and everything and everyone's dressed up. And I think there was a part of me that was quite kind of, quite like the showmanship of it all. And definitely like when I went to like a normal secondary school in Sussex, I started doing loads of theatre. And then at the same time was watching loads of stand up on TV because it was like that point of like, well, like Mock the Week was at the peak with like, you know, that lineup with like Frankie Boyle and like Russell Howard was arriving. And I was like, oh my God, young teenager, jeans and t-shirt people can do stand up. Wow. And then it's all sort of history from there really. But
yeah,
I mean, it was a weird upbringing in that I was like half in the city and half in the country. So I kind of, I moved to London when I was 21 and I've never quite worked it out. Like I like it here and it's busy and I get to do all the gigs and everything, but also there's always part of me that's like, God, it's too many people.
Yeah. It seems to be, I was in London at the weekend and having grown up there, it just seems like literally you couldn't move. I was walking down towards the gig and I was just like, what is this? We can't even get to where we need to be. It was insane.
Yeah.
You know, there are too many people there now. And I sound like an old fucker. Back in my day, there was four of us.
No, I don't know. I don't know. You reach an age where you're like, I know what a good time is, and a good time is people equidistant from each other, all doing something fun that is like a little bit communal, but not that communal. you know what a good time is, and being stuffed on the Piccadilly line at like 6 p.m.
Yeah.
With like another adult person, like the tube shouldn't feel like a horrible womb. It should be like, we should all have perfectly, like it all should be like nicely, like each of us should have our own little cubicle. You know, it should be, it just shouldn't be so gross.
I know.
I think that's, you know, I think it's totally fine to be pissed off at it all.
It is
really unnatural.
Like cattle trains, you just get shoved on. And, yeah, I know. And then, yeah, what you were describing sounds like a barn dance where you're like, everyone's having fun, it's communal, but not on top of each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Equidistant.
Line dancing. Yeah, everyone's just, you know what I mean? It should be, I don't want any of this mosh pit business. I want drinking a pint with two other people and there's three other people about 2 meters away. Social distancing is what I'm describing. My ideal scenario is everyone is behind a plastic sheet. I think this is maybe my problem and not everybody else's. Anyway,
So you grew up, like you were saying earlier, you grew up, so you were Catholic. And what was the changing point for you with that? Did you kind of one day kind of went, oh, this feels like it might be nonsense?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was two things. Firstly, I mean, comedy has its part to play in this because I started getting really into like, Tim Minchin and like there was a lot of stuff like Rufus Hound and like Ricky Gervais at the time was doing loads of like there was just so much kind of like atheist comedy and while I found it all quite kind of like aggressive and I wasn't like 100% sold on the tone of it all, I was like, I don't know, the kind of the observational mind that you use for comedy, the kind of clinical kind of like argument brain, you know, that's like, let's pull this, let's take this thing we all assume is normal and pull it apart and make it sound strange. That kind of does away with religion really quickly. You know, it's so easy to like make fun of religion with comedy because it's such an immediate absurdism, you know, it's so like, So I think it was partly that. And then it was also, I started, when I was at secondary school, I started having, we had Saturday morning school. We had which is horrible. eight a.m. to midday or 1 p.m. or something. And so suddenly Sunday became my only lion. And so there was this turning point, I think, when I was about 14, where in the Catholic Church, normally you'd get confirmed. You'd go and do an extra course in order to have a service where you go I've been raised Catholic and now I'm confirming that I'm a God boy. Let's do it. And you choose your saint and everything that you're going to, pray to and all this stuff. And in order to do that, I would have had to spend loads of Sunday mornings going to extra classes and things. And I chose sleep over God, basically. I'd just rather be asleep, really. And so that was sort of when it kind of went out the window a bit.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I don't know, this, I still, I don't, the more I think about it, I wouldn't go fully back to it at any point. But I do, there's still parts of it that culturally you remain, all the music is still in my brain, and that feels very otherworldly somehow. And I'm very into thinking about, I don't know, the ritual of it all and the idea of a lot of the good things that you can do with your life, spiritually, I think, are things you can do in a church. So having regular chats with people, thinking, praying is really just meditation and all those sort of things. I'm kind of there are good bits of this that are helpful, I think.
Yeah.
The idea of pausing, having a day off and just being once a week, just being okay, let's all eat some food and chill out and just think about our lives. I think it's quite good, but I couldn't do the full, back in the clothes and the, every week and everything like that. It's not really, it's not for.
It's
not
a lot, isn't it? It's a lot. It's a big commitment. Yeah. And it's funny with having grown up, not necessarily religious, but we were told that God existed. So there's still a part of you, because you were brought up that way, it's still a part of you that it's in you still, even though you kind of look and you're like, well, where? And then it's so as we go along and we find out more about the universe and our place in it and everything else that's around us, you go, yeah, where did it all start? Did it, what was before? Was there nothing? It was just nothing. And then this happened. And then you start, and I think the world got a bit of a, not a darker place, but I just miss magic. I grew up and magic went. I see how that happened now. And believing in things like Santa and God, and there was a nice feeling to it but there was other things that you didn't really understand. I miss that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is hugely. Yeah, I think about that a lot, because I'm always I don't know. I feel like I would turn 31 this year, and you start seeing a lot of your friends start doing making decisions, and not necessarily some of it's marriage and babies and that kind of thing, but some of it's also my friend is 35 and he's I'm getting back into Dungeons and Dragons. It's happening now. I'm doing it. Or you've got a friend who's I've picked up rock climbing and that's my whole thing now. I've got all the gear and I go every week and I've got a big chalk thing and I put on my little harness. And I think partly it's because you reach a point where you're I need to there is no I've got all the magic is gone. So what is where can I get the feeling of the magic? And part of it, I guess, is sometimes it's nostalgia. And then sometimes it's doing the thing I really like doing is really fun and gives me endorphins and is sociable or whatever. That's the closest we can get, that little dopamine thing that you get and you don't really understand where it comes from. That's the closest you can go, I think. I suppose for other people, it's learning about black holes and stuff, or but I don't know. There's more to it, but I think that's for me. That's the theory. I like okay if I can, and like that's what comedy is, right? It's like keep doing this thing, keep expressing myself in this way, keep building material and not really sure why. And actually, it's like because it feels good to be on stage and it feels good to make these things and to say them.
I think you're right. I think it's that having something to believe in is. Helps you get through, you know, because it's if you're if you don't have anything that you love to do, like you said before, but having a day where you just go, I'm not even going to send an email today. I'm gonna go and play with my model trains, or I'm gonna go spelunking, or I'm gonna do something else. I think you need that. Yeah, you're right. It's that belief in something.
Yeah, magic goes from being like wizards to being like, I'm gonna use my mocha pot today, like you know, or whatever it is. Or like, I'm gonna sit down for half an hour and stare out the window. Yeah, it's a different life. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, since we've had the little one, I've been watching a lot more TV. I didn't really watch a lot before. I'd watch films. I'd start watching programs and then go, oh, this is like, they're all kind of the same, aren't they? The same drama, depending on what it is, you know. And so you watch Sons of Anarchy and you go, oh, that's like blah, blah, blah. So I get it. But so now we've got the baby and I just sit and feed him and watch TV. I'm actually having a nice time. Having those moments where you have to sit and do nothing. You've just got this little fella. You've got to put fluid in him, and then you've got to clear the fluid out of him. And so you might as well watch. I watch documentaries about Robert Englund, who played Freddy Krueger, and watching the LA gang tattooist, Mr. Cartoon, and watching that. And I'm having a nice time in those moments. You know,
yeah, man, slowing it down.
Yeah.
And also, because you're not just doing, you're not like sitting, it's not 2 a.m. and you're sitting in your pants with a bottle of Strongbow. You can tell us how long ago I was drinking drunk Strongbow. I don't even know where it comes in. But like, it's not like it's very easy to sit and watch TV in the saddest way imaginable. But when you're like, you've got like this thing that you're caring for, doing it, you know, it's like, it has, the whole thing is like, so much more meaning. It's like part of your that's great, man. What an experience.
But it's like I've been watching Jason Statham films for research. I've just got this bit that goes into Jason Statham films, and I was like, you know what, I take the piss out of him, but I haven't actually watched that many of his films, and I was watching them, I've been watching them, and I was right. But there's some of them have got more layers than others. But yeah, that's my. I haven't given myself that moment because I always felt like I should be doing something. I'm like, I should be out there. Got to be grinding. You got to be pushing. And why am I indoors? I should be outdoors. I've got to be send my emails outdoors. Why am I doing it in my flat?
It's the pressure to constantly be like. Like optimizing every moment for the good of, you know, my career and like, or like what's going to make me a better person? What is going to like, well, how could I be using this? How could this be the most useful possible? That can drive you fully wild, I think.
Yeah.
And I've definitely like, yeah, I think that thing of like slowing down is so important because, you know, I mean, I don't have a baby, so I put my hands up and say like, hey, you know, it's not the same deal at all. But I do think like you can get really stuck in like task orientated thinking all the time. Every day can just be like, well, all these little parcels of time are just like separated up into like the little jobs I've got to do with them. And then suddenly you realize like 2 weeks has passed and you're like, I actually don't really know what I did. I didn't really experience any of that. I was doing the bits. I was just on autopilot. It can really make you go crazy.
Yeah. Obsessed with lists. People are obsessed with to-do lists. And, when you get... I think my wife does it. And a few people, they write on it, make a list. And then when they make the list, they tick that off and say, that's one.
Easy little bit of, just straight on. It's a little serotonin just to start the day.
Done.
That's cheeky. Yes. That's cheeky. That's what that is. That's...
Cheating the system. So what do you, when you're writing, do you sit down specifically and go, right, I'm going to write today? Or are you hit with,
Yeah, I do definitely like parcel out time to do it because otherwise it doesn't happen. I have a day job as well. I manage a bookshop in South London.
Okay.
And so like between that and comedy, like it's hard to find the time. And often, the times I would normally be doing like on the way to a gig or on the way back from a gig, you're on a train somewhere, and sometimes that can be really fruitful time. But then often, if you're coming off the back of something else, like you need that time to just decompress, and get into just like let the whatever it is, the soup in your brain just sort of like settle down for a second. So I do, I try. If I have a day off, I'll be like, okay, we got the morning. Let's just do the morning. And it doesn't matter what it is. I just need to sit down with a coffee in a shop or the desk, get to the desk and then just I try and think of it the way I'm thinking about it at the moment is like it's like doing little sudokus or little puzzles or something like that where like it doesn't matter what it is, and it doesn't matter if it goes right, and it doesn't matter. It's like doing a crossword. The number of crosswords that you've like started and just never finished, or that you finished and then like, well, what do you do? You don't get a prize. You finished the thing.
Just showing everybody. I did the thing.
Yeah. Seeing on the train, just being like, yeah,
look,
that crowd goes wild. Yeah, it goes wild. No, it's it's just like trying to put that space to just be like, I'm just going to play around. I'm going to doodle. And then, going back through notebooks and just like occasionally just like reading over stuff or like my iPhone notes. I found I didn't used to use them very often because I don't really like writing on my phone. But then, sometimes it's the quickest way if you do think of something on the move to just be like, shove it in there. Yeah. And then you can go through it all and be like, oh, that might be, let's talk about that. Let's like noodle with that.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the odd kind of thing where I've worked out, I want to tell a story or I want to talk about something on stage. And I've maybe got like three lines that I want to say.
Yeah.
And then everything in between is just, let's see if I can find something on the way. Let's just walk it through in real time. So it's really sort of it's a bit of a portmanteau process. It's not one way. And I kind of like that about it as well. I'm not one of these people really. I have too much kind of I don't know. I like to be distracted. I kind of got magpie vibes that I think sometimes I have some friends who like write scripts and I really find that so difficult because I just don't like the idea of being like, I've got to get this scene cracked or like these two scenes cracked before midday and they just have to sit there with it. I'm always like, I want to be in a coffee shop at the seat closest to the window so that I can see everybody milling around. And if at any point I just want to get up and go, I can, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like I sort of catch myself on the cusp of having an idea, it's like, I don't know how to describe it. Just like, I just don't want to be like holed up somewhere doing homework. I want to be like sort of just on the fly sort of, and that's sort of how it all comes together, I suppose.
I know what you mean.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I if I have an idea, I have to get it down and get it done immediately. Because if I have to come back to it, I would have. By the time I come back to it, my brain's gone, this is shit now. You should have done this straight away. You should have sent this out. You should have done the thing and just sent it to someone. And it's like with books. Like, so I love books and I've got loads of books and I've read loads of books, but I have to read them more or less in one go. Otherwise,
I
might come back to it once or twice. But on the third time, if I've got to come back to it again, I kind of wander off. So I've got a lot of half-read books. Terrible.
No, don't. That's I absolve you of all of the sins of that, because that is my whole life. Is that like I because of the shop, like I get sent a lot of like proofs and stuff, and I like books anyway, so I like I pick stuff up in charity shops all the time, and like. I don't finish most things. Like I really read half of most things. And it's dreadful because I really do love reading and I want to get to the full story. But you do, I think at a certain point you have to like relent to the fact that like there's a reason you didn't, you know, it wasn't grabbing you or, you know, you don't have the time and that's fine. Something about the subject matter is not, you know, or there's something more exciting. And that's also fine. Like, follow that bit of joy and excitement to the next thing. Don't, you know, there are definitely some things that I think it's worth like plugging ahead with. And, but you'll, you know, as with anything, as with like any creative project, it's like you'll feel the need to do that.
Yes.
And you'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
That'll come from in. So that the call will come from inside the house. You know, it's like you're going to, it'll make you you'll sort of self-generate that, I think.
That's true, yeah.
But well, there should be no guilt with reading. I don't want you to ever, you read whatever you, particularly you have a baby, man. You don't read two pages and enjoy them. Don't make that a cause for confession. That's not.
I think this is something that people need to hear, because I see many people, and I know many people, have got a stack of books by the bed or wherever they keep them. And they're always, this society that we live in, you know, you're a better, more intelligent person if you've read all these books, and you're less so if you've only read half of them, and you've only read half of the books, and there's all this pressure, and people, I've got all these books to get through, and that's such a nice thing that people need to hear. I already feel so much lighter.
It just doesn't matter. It's also like, who are you impressing? Like, you know, you get to the end of one of them, and like the difference between having half read something and having fully read it is like the only difference it makes is to you. Like maybe there was something in the second half of the book that would have been helpful for you. But there's no point being like, oh, I read this so I could tell people I read this bit. Oh, give up. Like, just truly, what's the point? And I always, you know, the time it always comes up is when I'm moving house and suddenly you realize that, like, I have been hoarding these things and they're all potential. They're all like the potential person that I wanted to be a year ago when I saw that book on a thing and I was like, oh, that's who I want to be, someone who's read that, please. And then you picked it up and you've taken it home and then it sat in your house for a year and you've never read it. And now you're having to pay to have it moved and you're having to like put it into another box that you're having to carry to the thing. And like, it's just like, it's such a, you're confronted with this thing. And me and my old flatmate, Jamie, used to say, he used to come in and just be like, who are we impressing? Who is this for? I think, and the fantasy, it's like, they're like, all of your ex-girlfriends are like coming around your house and being like, wow, he reads so much more now. Yeah. I was like, no, that's not, that would never happen. And if it did, it wouldn't matter. Like, what's wrong with you?
I know what you mean. I had so many books. And then it was like the last time I moved, I kind of went, what? Again, it was like, I've only got these so that people come around and go, oh, you've got that. And it's like, I've never read it, but I've got it. And so I was like, right, I was really hard. I was like, right, just get rid of everything that was just for show, which, you know, I mean, I think a lot of books are like that, really. They're kind of, look at that. Yes, of course I've got Chomsky. Look at that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just to show, it's just that. And he's like, what is the point? So now we've got audio books that I find, which is so much, because you can do something else. Wow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The author or an actor that you know is reading the book to you. So I go to the gym quite a bit and I'm listening to Patrick Stewart at the minute. And just, awesome. I've listened to Arnold Schwarzenegger's book and I've listened to all these people and he's like, oh, I would have never have read these in a million years.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so cool. I think anyone who's into that, I'm not an audio person because I'm too like, I get quite fixated on hearing every, so I want to like read every sentence of something. Yeah. So I always find it very like, I'm very like tactile. My brain works with just like, I want to hold it. And I want to like the same reason I wouldn't ever get a Kindle because I just need to know where, how far I am into stuff. And all of that. And it's probably quite a childish kind of fixation, but all the people I know who do audio books and stuff are just so evangelical about it because they're like, it's changed my life. I really struggled with reading. And now I've read all this stuff and I know about it and it was like enjoyable. It was like an enjoyable experience. It wasn't something I was like beating myself over the head with. you know, it's such a lovely, I think it's great. I think it's so great.
Yeah. And it's just, because I did that. I was like, right, okay, let's listen to some of the classics, right? You're never going to sit and read, you know, the Odyssey because in your head it's too big, too fiddly. You know, you want to, you know of it. Let's have it. So I listened to it and Ian McKellen's reading it. Mm. I got about a quarter of the way in and I went, oh, this is just every movie that's ever been made. It's like, he's on this quest, but he's got to do these other side quests before he gets to the thing he needs. And it's there. And you go, oh, this is everything.
Yeah. Oh, man. I did my degree on the Odyssey, actually. I was
really?
I did classics and stuff. So I did like the Odyssey and the Iliad and all that stuff. And it is like, it's one of those ones where you're like, as you say, it's like foundational. It's like, it's the beginning of everything. And yet I would also totally understand if people never read it ever because all the like building blocks are there, but also like stylistically, whilst it is really interesting, it isn't, it's like very, you know, there's parts of it that are really repetitive. Yeah. There's parts that are really like specific to you. Like you have to know all of the Greek myth and all of the stuff in order to like understand the references and like thingy, son of. There's bits of it that are a bit like the Bible where it's like, you're just like, okay, this is, you know, there's a bit in the Iliad where they literally have a catalog of ships and it's like a whole chapter of just like, here's all the army that are at the thing. And you're like, no one. No one feels you know, at the time, I am sure, you know, and in the immediate cultural wake of that, in up until about like 500 BC, I'm sure it was all incredibly interesting and important. But, you know, now it's very difficult to, you can get excited about the like narrative structure of the whole thing. And there are some beautiful bits of poetry in it. But I would challenge any academic to get like emotionally excited about, you know, a list of genealogy at the beginning of it. It's like, oh.
Oh, statistics. Oh.
Yeah, just... yeah, well, exactly. Ooh. Yeah, it's that basically, isn't it? It's just pure data.
I know it's in the same. I was reading The Road to Wigan Pier, George Orwell, and there's a bit in that where he's just listing. I can't remember what he's listing. He's just listing either what people earn or money or list it. It's a whole chapter. It's just a list. Okay. And you know, and the pier's not there anymore.
It's so tricky, isn't it? You're like, you want to enjoy it. You're like, this is like classic literature. I should need this, and it should like unlock something inside it. And at some point, you just have to be like, okay, maybe not all of it is gonna make me cry, you know.
But this is it. This is another pressure that we put on ourselves. Is that there's always those. These are the books you should have read before you die. Mm-hmm. I spend all my time reading all these books that are huge, half of them, and I'm going to feel shit because I don't understand them. And yeah, it's just going to make me the bit of life I've got left after having read all these books. It's just me being depressed, thinking that I'm stupid.
Yeah, I think it's like, I think as with all things, it's like moderation is key. Like there's always, it's like, great to read one of them, like set yourself a project and read one of them and just be like, cool, I read Middlemarch or I read, you know, whatever it is, you know, if you feel like that's something you want to do. But in the meantime, read Back of the Radio Times, like have a...
have a sandwich, have a nice, don't worry about it.
have a sandwich. I think that's really the answer to all of this, is just have a goddamn sandwich. I think that's really...
I keep saying it. It seems to be my answer to everything at the minute. It's just fuck it off and have a sandwich, mate. You'll feel so much better once you've had
I think this is the wisest thing I've ever heard. This is like, that is, I think, my life motto. I think that's, I'm going to adopt this. I might get this tattooed on my... I was trying to where would be an appropriate place. I was about to say my lower back, and I was like, no, that's not for me, though, is it?
A trap stamp of a sandwich.
Yeah, like, let's just have a sandwich, shall we? Yeah, yeah.
Let's just stick to the... Keep it easy. We're overcomplicated.
Yeah, let's just... Yeah.
You'd have Greg's across your shoulder blades, like a 50 cent tattoo.
I bet if we Google that, someone has got that.
There must be
a Greg's.
Greg's just across in this like hip hop, really like Mr. Cartoon kind of font. Yeah.
Yes. There sausage some... roll down the arm. Just on that. Yeah.
Just like when they have their kids' names, it's just sausage roll, steak bake.
Yeah. Oh man.
Maybe there is a name of their kids. Oh god, this is taking a turn. Maybe that's... Oh man. But you seem, this is the thing, you seem to have quite a handle on things. You seem pretty chilled.
Well, that's nice, man. That's good. The illusion is complete. Hooray.
Well, I guess it's like all of us. We all have our ups and downs, don't we? And but that's another thing as well, because people, you know, when they're growing up and they're brought up with a religious background, and so, you know, they're told, like, God is there, God is God, you know, he will take care of you. And then when you come away from that, that must be quite difficult when you're like, oh, shit, I'm sort of, now what? I'm sort of on my own here. That's quite daunting. Must be quite daunting, really. Even though your beliefs may have changed, this, like we said earlier, there's still that element of, yeah, but, you know, I think he is there. And I feel like I've turned my back on him a little bit. And I don't know. Tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't quite ever go away the... I don't know if this is necessarily just the religious stuff. It may just be like an element of my education in general, but like that feeling of... something I talk to a lot. I talk to my girlfriend at the time, at the moment, about a lot is good boy syndrome, which is this thing I've heard a lot about, which is this like you just can't. Everything you're doing is in order to like you just want to pass the test. You just want to be like. Just do it well so that everybody likes you, and like don't you don't want to get in trouble, really don't like being like told off, don't want to make anyone angry or upset, or don't really want any conflict ever. And I think there is an element of the like religious side to that. It's like there shouldn't really ever be any issues, just you know, and if something is difficult, don't worry, we'll deal with that by putting it over here. And like and if there is something really like difficult or even just different, then like, and it is like a fundamental part of who you are, then that's bad and quite, you should feel quite bad about that. Really. It's like, you know, shameful or guilt, you know, make you feel guilty. So I don't, yeah. I mean, that's something I think it's, I'm sort of famously, I think, and in the same in my family as well, not very good at admitting to when I am having a hard time or when it is more difficult. And again, I don't know where that comes from, but it is, it's, you do have to sort of, I don't know. It's part of being an adult, isn't it? It's like just learning how to confront difficult things in your life and admit when you're wrong and be open to change. Even saying these things, I'm like, I hate that, what I'm saying. I didn't realize I was going to go full into therapy mode here, but yeah, it's I don't know if that is a hangover from childhood. I assume it probably is, which is not wanting to. And again, comedy plays in the good part in this, in that it's a very easily monetizable way of making everyone happy, making everything all right, not allowing any conflict in the room, you know. And that's why I'll never be probably like you see a lot of I'm not very good at like some people's style is very like they're happy to sit in an uncomfortable moment with a crowd. And or they want to provoke a kind of something a little bit nastier in the room, and like I like to think I have a broad palette of styles and skills within my act, but like it is still like I don't like it. I don't want to be in an awkward position, you know. It's a bit like with your friend whose mum was died 7 years ago. Like you just you don't. That was never the intention, was to get, there was never to get there. And there are other acts who I'm sure would love, it would like lap that up. And that's, but it, for me, it's just not, does not interest me. Cause I just want to, I want everyone to have a nice time. I want to like jazz hands it. You know?
I'm the same. You know, I'm the same. And I find the only, I've been a bit short tempered with people that I don't mind a heckle, but when you're an arsehole about it, I get annoyed that you've, I'm like, no, don't do that. That's, and it, I find it really difficult. I lose my patience a bit with that, but yeah, I'm the same as you. I want it, I want everyone to have a good time, which is why that woman rolling her eyes, I was like, no, you, what can I do to fix it? Rather than like, this wasn't having a good time or whatever she was doing. I should have just let it go, but I wanted everyone to have a good time. I'm the same. Yeah,
it's hard because they're bringing, she's come prepped with cynicism. She's come prepped with like, oh, I didn't want to enjoy this. And then I didn't. So, ha, I win. You know? Which it's very difficult to combat that. You can try. But it is also, at the end of the day, it's not your... It's you can't give people a nice time, and you can try to give people a nice time. You can't cure them of their own personality. You know, we're like a fun distraction or a fun kind of thought experiment, but we're not there to like administer medicine.
No, that's true. That is true. Yeah, yeah. What was it like being in boarding school? I've spoken to a few people about that. I know Tom Horton was on, and he talked about it, and having gone there from a young age and how hard it was to adjust to it, because you're just thrust into this world of, oh, shit, I'm not with my parents anymore. Now what?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard at first. I was pretty sad when I was 8 years old, and it's like,
wow.
You are just like, I don't want to be here. Even though it is very like new and novel and exciting, and you're meeting all these new people. And I was very lucky in that, like, I had a really welcoming, lovely group of people to try. I mean, if you're going in and it's a more hostile environment, I can imagine it is like pretty horrific. But I had, you know, the people I really kind of still have friends from that era of my life who were just very kind and have always been very kind and welcoming and a lovely part of that community. So that was, you know, it was the best it could have been, but it was still really difficult. Like, it's just not nice to not be. And you just learn how to, you know, you learn how to be independent. And I think it meant that when I was a teenager, and particularly in my early 20s as well, I was very just like, I know, you know, maybe I don't know how to do everything. I certainly didn't, but I'm going to try, and I don't really want your help. I don't want to, you know, I was very like, I was probably quite uncommunicative with my parents and my sister. Whereas like my sister, who's a bit older than me, didn't go to boarding school and was very much more like around and in my parents' lives, and like would talk to them all the time and ring them all the time and all that kind of stuff. And I just, because I had learned to be not, you know, and we didn't, you know, I was young and mobiles weren't really a thing. So if you wanted to talk, you had to find a specific time, agree with them like a week in advance, and then use the payphone that was in the school thingy and, you know, have your conversation, your very, you know, loving, sweet conversation with your parents in the hallway with all of the kids coming past you or whatever. Yeah. So really, like, it was, you know, but there's bits of it that I really, I feel so lucky to have had, like, you know, because we lived in Sussex, like it was way too far. Like we got one day off on like a Saturday where we could see our parents and like hang out with them, and you know, most people just went home because they either lived in London already or lived like close enough that it was fine. But because we lived in Sussex, it was like 2.5 hours to drive home, so by the time we got there, you'd have had like an hour at home and have to drive back again. My parents would just come up on Saturdays, the teachers, so they had Saturdays off, and they'd come up and we just do stuff around London. So like for 5 years we did, like, you know, we went and did touristy things, or we, you know, went to find free stuff, you know, there's museums and galleries and everything. They're like, everything's so easy to get for kids as well. Like, so tickets are cheap for everything. You know, it's so easy to go and like have a great time in London with a child if you're just visiting for a day. Like, it's such a, there's so many things to do. And because after like a few years of doing that, we got really used to like how you travel around and like how you don't, you know, don't go to Oxford Circus on Saturday at midday because it's a horror show, you know. So that was like, and so I just got to see so much cool stuff, and I got to, you know, occasionally we'd go and see like a matinee at like the Old Vic or something because there was a discount on, or like we'd go to the Museum of London or whatever, and like, and it was just, it meant then when I moved, and it may probably gave me a bit of a love of London. So when I moved here at 21, I was like, I know a fair bit about the city already. I'm not just throwing myself into the city. And I don't know, like, you're excited by it. There's so much stuff going on. And I've never really got over that bug. Even now when I'm like, you know, furious at how much everything costs and
Yeah.
Too many people everywhere, and it's dirty and polluted, and not have green space and all this sort of stuff. Even now, I'm still like, you go over a bridge and you're like, oh, wow, yeah. I just live in this incredible place.
I know what you mean. It was, so, having been up there last weekend, even though I had that moment where I was like, for fuck's sake, I just want to walk down this street. But I can't, because everybody's walking down this street at the same time. Yeah. But I did, I kind of popped out in Soho and wandered through and then wandered down to my gig and had my headphones on. And I was like, oh, do you know what? This is actually pretty cool. It's cool. I know when I've been to other capital cities, you know, when I've been to Paris or wherever, and you look at those people and go, whoa, how cool is that? They live here. That's so cool. Other people think that of you when you're walking along, like, that guy clearly lives here because he's really annoyed.
Yeah. That's it, isn't it? It's kind of, I think when you can live in the fantasy of it a little bit, where there's the bit of kind of like, how romantic is this? You know, that's very nice.
Yeah.
But when you're like, when you're paying your bills and it's not quite as fun.
No.
You know, it's, I don't know.
I like the people. I like to be able to come away from the people, but I think it's because I know that the people will still be there when I go back. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. I have that luxury of being able to dip in and out of it. I can spend time on my own because there'll be people to go back to and spend time with, which is something I've realized as I'm older, which is nice.
Yeah.
Go and have a sandwich and I'll go back again.
That's it. That's a nice, like, I mean, that's what, yeah, one of the things I've come to, I think, you know, you do this job for, you know, a decade or whatever it is now for me, and you've suddenly got friends in most of the major cities in the UK, like, you know, and so suddenly, like, going somewhere isn't this like big, oh, where am I going to go? And oh, it's going to be horrible. And it's going to, you know, and I'm not going to know anyone and it's going to be scary. Suddenly it's like, I'll go and see, you know, I'll put something out on Instagram and like three people will be like, no way, I'm here. And, you know, it's nice having the kind of the travelingness of it. And also the people who like live in all these places that you get to go to. That's the luxury, I think.
It is.
Of doing it for a bit and also getting older a bit, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, I think it is that. I'm just more aware of, I think, and I always knew this was going to happen because I've heard it said so many times, but I think now I'm older, I'm like, oh yeah, I need to appreciate things more. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I'm glad that someone read The Odyssey to me so that I didn't spend twice the time trying to read it.
Yeah.
You know, and just focusing on stuff that makes you happy. And this, talking to you today, Ben Pope, has made me very, very happy. I'm so glad
this, mate. This was great, yeah.
It's been lovely. You're such an easy man to talk to. Beautiful, beautiful. Where are you on tour? Are you taking your show on tour? What's happening, Ben?
Yeah, well, I am. Oh, let's think. What's going to be the most useful thing to say? I did a tour in the UK last autumn, so that's kind of not helpful for anyone listening to this. But I'm taking that same show to New Zealand very shortly.
Brilliant.
So I'll be there in February, which is this month. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And then I'm coming down to Brighton. In fact, I'm coming to do the Brighton Fringe.
Wonderful.
For three evenings spread across the month of May.
Lovely. I shall make sure I come and see you because I enjoyed you immensely. New Zealand, beautiful place. It's not part of the festival. You're just going over there.
Well, it's part of the, they have like a fringe. It's not the International Comedy Festival. It's the like fringe festival that they have that's in Wellington.
Okay.
So it's a bit more of a kind of fringy vibe. Mm. It's not like fancy galas and stuff. But I have a very close friend who lives out there and I really wanted to go back there to visit. And I thought, you know what? I think I can probably, if I do a load of promotion, I can fill a room, I'm sure, for two nights. So I've gone there and I just want to get the feel of it as well. I haven't done much gigging outside of the UK. So I was like, it'd be quite fun to go and see, they have a good scene there, as far as I'm aware. So I'm keen to go and find out.
Oh, you'll have a lovely time. I have such a beautiful... If I could live anywhere else, it would be New Zealand. I have had such a nice time there. The people are beautiful. The gigs have always been amazing. I've had a great time, and I'm genuinely envious that you are going. But I shall go back. I shall go back. And where can we find you on the socials, Ben Pope?
You can find me on Instagram. I'm at Popes Benedict, like Eggs Benedict, but with Popes. I'm on TikTok as well, which is also at Popes Benedict. And I think that's it. I have Twitter still, but I don't know if anyone uses that anymore. At Ben W. Pope. I'm on Twitter, or X, or whatever we're calling it.
But lovely. Thank you for joining us today, Ben Pope. This has been absolutely first class. So this has been Insane in the Membrane with myself, Rich Wilson. This has been Ben Pope. We'll see you next time.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.